The Doug and Wolf Show.
The next 4 hours of your life will be outstanding wherever you are if you keep listening to The Doug and Wolf Show.
You're calling your shot.
I'm
right
calling
now.
My shot on today's show.
Doug Franz, Ron Wolfley.
You know that's good radio.
Oh, yeah.
Doug and Wolf, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Yeah, there we go right there. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, stick the index finger into the air. The Doug and Wolf Show, Savages in the Morning, broadcasting on a Cowbell Friday. Bang that thing. Oh, it feels good, does it not? Yeah, you made it down the hill. The apex, of course, was on Quasimodo Wednesday. We've been going down the hill into the weekend ever since. And now you are here, brothers, right? It's Friday morning. Welcome to the best day of the year, the Friday before Thanksgiving in a three-day week.
Everybody's working for
baby! Flash the one, Douglas. Good morning.
I did one. Bear flashed the one, and then he stuck the one in his eye. I was a little worried about him.
What do you mean? I missed that. Oh, okay. You were just,
you're just going at an eye booger.
It's because it's 6 o'clock in the morning. Is that it, Bear? Punch it.
You want a piece of my heart?
Wherever you are, look out. Somebody might be scoring a shorthanded goal right next to you.
How about the Coyotes?
Oh, you got, just crazy.
You got to be kidding me. And when I think of our desert dogs, I came across this story, ladies and gentlemen. I have to bust in here, and this is always a dangerous proposition, is it not, Doug Lace?
No, feel free to drive in the first segment.
As I was getting ready for this morning's show, I saw this headline, right? You know, some of these weird, you know, you go to these sites and you'll see this headline.
Yeah, we don't go
right?
to the sites you go to.
No. Stop it, please. Chinese city bans dog walking in daylight hours. Okay, what is nefarious about that? What is nefarious about that? There's so many different things. And this is, I would say this is some good headline writing, is it not, Basin audience? Chinese city bans dog walking in daylight hours. What's the first thing you think of? You commie, right? That's number one. You commie Red Joe.
I thought of.
What, you can't walk a dog in daylight? The Chinese city, and it's not just this one Chinese city, from what I'm told. See, this is what happens when you're a commie. This is what happens when you live in Beijing, ladies and gentlemen. You can't walk your dog from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m.
10 p.m., wow.
Yeah. Stop and think about that. You can't walk them 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. You can't do it.
Well, since you read the article, what was the reasoning?
Well, the reasoning is, you know what, honestly, first of all, I'll tell you why. This is great because it brought it up in the article, and gather around, I'm going to read it right out of the article for you. Listen to this. Many provinces across China have strict rules on dog ownership, a result of the belief of Communist China's founder, Mao Zedong, that they are a bourgeois affectation. They are a middle class, the bourgeois, right? They are something the middle class loves, something the higher, the bourgeois, actually love more than any. We're all not the same. It's an affection that the bourgeois have. Think about that for a second. That's the reason why dogs are not popular over there. That and the fact that there's a lot of rabies with a lot of these dogs.
So
and a lot of deaths.
If you own a dog, you represent an affluent middle class, which is anti-communism. So
exactly
we want you to bring them out at night.
Think about that.
Is that exactly what it is right there?
And you know what? You know what's so weird about this? Think about it, right? You've got communists on one side, and then you got capitalists on the other, right? You got freedom-loving people like ourselves. And yet, are you not suspicious, ladies and gentlemen, of every neighbor that walks their dog at night? Are you not flat out? What are you doing? What are you doing walking your dog at night? Are you kidding me? You're not going to walk them by my yard and let them do their right? Like we see a lot.
There was this older lady that lived, I don't know, 9, 10 houses down.
You know what I'm talking about.
And I caught her on my way into work. So it's 4:30, 4:15 in the morning.
Yes.
And she's out walking the dog knowing that nobody else is going to see what that dog is doing.
Exactly.
Guys, honestly.
What?
I have to walk my dog to have her go to the bathroom before I get in. I leave my house at 3.
Okay.
I'm one of those creepy people.
Okay, you're out there. All right, you got your dog. What are you doing walking by my yard? What, are you letting your dog off the leash? Are you letting your
but
dog
Maloney,
do
you are a
his business
person.
Or her business on my yard?
You know what?
Are you cleaning up?
Of course I'm cleaning up, but I will let her do her business wherever at 3 o'clock in the morning just so I can leave for work and get here on time.
Okay, but you're cleaning it up.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's right there. But
the old lady that lived down the street from me, she wasn't cleaning it up.
Somebody out here, it's just the...
And for some reason, she didn't like it when I blared my horn
right,
at her.
It's just the juxtaposition of Commie Red Joe won't let you walk your dog unless it's night. And here we are, freedom-loving Americans. And you know what? Yeah, you better not be walking your dog at night.
The more amazing thing about this story is we talked about dogs for 5 minutes, and it took that long for Maloney to jump in.
No.
I mean, you think you love dogs?
What kind of dog do you have,
Meet
Maloney.
Meet Maloney. Maloney is a dog nut.
I have a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel.
Okay, so that's a little dog. Right?
She's like 20 pounds.
Oh, okay. And you little dog, too!
Oh, no, not your Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, she's not a Yorkie.
Okay.
Or that's not
all
a Yorkie.
Right.
It's a little small thing.
Kind of
yeah, what was funny
dog.
Is Maloney said it's not a Yorkie and then looked at me like I'm dog expert.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Like I was going to be able to say, well, actually, I don't have any idea.
Okay.
I know German Shepherds and
right.
Beagles, and that's about it.
Let's all
I can
be
figure
happy
out a bulldog
right now.
Every now and then.
Let's be happy we don't live in Beijing.
And now, it's time for your Arizona Sports Starting Five.
Commie Red Joe.
You can't go to work without knowing these five huge stories. Here's Doug Franz and Ron Wolfley.
I, on the other hand, say good morning, Vince.
Number five.
Number five this morning is Thursday Night Football. Well, that stinks when they come back and win. Seahawks win by 3.
Well, it's kind of a wild Thursday night. Really happy about this win for our guys, for all of us, for the 12s that were waiting for us. We took us a long time to get going in the first half. We just didn't play well at all. But it does show you that you know, that doesn't decide the game.
That wasn't my takeaway, though.
Yeah.
My takeaway was... It's officially unofficial. There will be a new head coach of the Packers next year.
Wow. You know what I was thinking, ladies and gentlemen? Seattle may have saved their season last night.
Oh, yeah. That's very fair.
Number four.
Number four this morning is ASU Oregon, ASU San Francisco. Let's go with Oregon first.
When you can run the ball very effectively on everybody and anybody, which they had when they put their mind to it, a running game travels extremely well on the road, and I think it's going to be a closer game than most people think against Oregon. I think they're going to pull off a victory.
Whoa, there's Mark May on Burns and Gambo yesterday making the prediction that he thinks it's going to happen, ASU over Oregon, and then therefore setting up an opportunity for the Territorial Cup to be for the Pac-12 South. That kickoff is at 8:30. You can hear it on ESPN 620 AM. You will not hear ASU hoops tonight, as ASU is scheduled to play San Francisco tonight here on 98.7 FM, but that game's been postponed due to the fact of the terrible campfire in Northern California.
Yeah, you can run the ball, you got a chance, and the Sun Devils have a chance.
Number three!
Number three this morning, are you kidding? I mean, this is the Nashville Predators. Not that they have a national following, but they're the best team in hockey.
To the blue line, Roman Josi, left circle, one-timer. Ellis tipped in front. In fact, that hit the skate of the Coyotes defenseman, Connaughton. Racing out with it, Grabner. Grabner over the line, fires. He scores! Shorthanded goal number 10 for the Coyotes.
If you are on a power play against the Arizona Coyotes, they are twice as likely to score as you are. The score is 10-5. Short-handed goals by the Coyotes, power play goals given up.
Darcy Kuemper was fire. Oh, more on this as the show unfolds.
Number two.
Number two this morning, the Arizona Cardinals taking on the Oakland Raiders. Al Holcomb says, Don't you worry.
We've got to be ready to play a good brand of football, a physical brand of football in front of our home crowd. You know, because at the end of the day, you know, we still have a long way to go and a lot to prove.
No doubt about it. You know what? A foundation starting to form. Can you build on it?
Number one.
And for the first time in the history of the Doug and Wolf Show on a Football Friday, the Arizona Diamondbacks are number one. Why? Because Greinke, Mathis, Goldie could all not be downtown anymore. Because the whole team might not be downtown. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. A couple things that you need to know this morning. Whatever you're doing, try to be a part of the show this morning at 7 o'clock. And we are going to give you a gentleman by the name of Bob Nightingale, friend of the show. And Bob is the baseball insider for USA Today. And he sent out two tweets in the last 24 hours that are pretty eye-opening. I mean, things that'll kind of grab you. And I don't even know which one is bigger than the other, to be honest. I mean, they're both so huge. So I will give you both, and you kind of decide your reaction. We talked to Derek Hall about 2 years ago about, of all things, the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah.
The Atlanta Braves, Turner Field, downtown stadium, and it is one in which it was the conversion of the Olympic Stadium that was built for the Atlanta Games. I think the Atlanta Games were 96. That's off the top of my head, so I'm sorry if I butchered that. And then it became Turner Field, and they've been there for years. But traffic in Atlanta is so bad. One side of Turner Field is kind of a crime-ridden part of Atlanta, so you've got to be very careful where you park when you go to the game. And everybody thought Braves fans were just bandwagon, and the Braves decided, we don't think it is. We think it's because people with money don't want to go down there and deal with that traffic.
I see.
And it's too hard to go get your family and then come back downtown. So they moved to the high northern suburbs. They really, I mean, they're nowhere near downtown.
Yeah.
The Atlanta Braves are.
Right.
According to a Bob Nightingale tweet, high-end people from the Arizona Diamondbacks were in deep studying of the move from Turner Field, learning more about how things are going for the Braves up in Cobb County, and then he even threw out for their potential move to Scottsdale.
Whoa. What?
Whoa. We've kind of thrown that out there every now and then, just like, whoa, and what if they moved
to Salt River Fields?
Yeah. But that was I mean, from Bob Nightingale. And if that, and like I said, there's two tweets that'll grab you. And then another tweet that he sent out, which was pretty shocking, was the fact that the Diamondbacks in no way are even trying to hide it anymore about the trade opportunity for Zach Greinke. And then he says they know that they're going to have to pay a portion of the remaining $104.5 million on his contract. Be interesting if they packaged Greinke and Goldschmidt.
Wow. The packaging of Zach Greinke and Paul Goldschmidt. Does that seem like that would be the most effective way to actually move these guys? I guess it all comes down to, what are they getting in compensation, right? What are they getting back? What kind of value are they getting back right now? It just doesn't seem like that's the best way to go about it, to package Zach Greinke and Paul Goldschmidt, like you're getting some type of deal. Paul Goldschmidt is a guy, to me at least, where if you're going to trade him, if you're going to have the circumference to actually move Paul Goldschmidt, it better be for Paul Goldschmidt, and we better know exactly what you got back for him, period.
I can tell you that I think both options are on the table. I think here's a good way to look at it. Keith Law, baseball insider of ESPN, thought that Paul Goldschmidt is worth four prospects.
Yeah.
Two of them being premier prospects.
Yes.
With the Zach Greinke trade, it's really simple to explain this. You're buying prospects, in a sense. The amount, if you trade Zach Greinke and you don't chip in any money on the Zach Greinke contract, you will get very, very low minor leaguers. I mean, and when I say low, I don't even mean high A, rookie ball. I mean guys that the team has probably given up on.
They're watering down.
Yeah, you're not getting much at all in the Zach Greinke trade. The more you're willing to pay on the contract, the better the prospect you'll get.
Sure.
which is therefore why a Greinke-Goldie combination actually does make sense, because you're in a sense saying the only way we can get any good prospects and yet still not have to pay for the Greinke contract is to trade them both.
See, but don't you think you're going to have to pay for the Greinke contract?
Not if you trade Goldie with it.
So in other words, you're going to take less for Paul Goldschmidt.
You're going to take less, but you're going to get a lot more for Greinke.
Yeah, but see, once again, we're talking about money here. I'm sorry. I'll trade Zach Greinke and say, okay, I'm going to eat $14 million. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to eat $14 million. I mean, what was the payroll last year? 156 or somewhere in there?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So I'm going to eat $14 million of it, but I'm not going to take less for Paul Goldschmidt. I'm not going to package him with Zach Greinke. So now all of a sudden we can say, hey, listen, we didn't have to pay $14 million. Didn't have to do that. No way. I'm going to trade Zach Greinke. This is just me. I'm going to trade Zach Greinke by his own and on his own in his own merit, and I'm going to do the same with Paul Goldschmidt.
So, again, we're going to be talking to Bob Nightingale about these tweets coming up at 7 o'clock. One key sign to me that, not on Goldie, that Greinke is gone, as if we didn't already know, but Jeff Mathis signing with the Texas Rangers. That's the personal catcher for Zach Greinke. So wouldn't you fight a little bit hard to keep Mathis if you're keeping Zach Greinke? It's not a guarantee, but I think it's just like another sign. Okay, you let Mathis go, and now
I think you're right about that, Doug Lease. Once again, Basinonians, when you're built on pitching and defense, the departure of Jeff Mathis does not make you better. It does not. If Mathis is indeed going to sign with the Rangers, and there's no reason to believe that he's not, the Diamondbacks just got worse. You're built on pitching and defense, and Jeff Mathis was your best catcher when it comes to that, no doubt.
Garth Brooks, a number one selling solo artist in U.S. history, makes his electrifying return to Arizona at State Farm Stadium on March 23rd. Tickets go on sale for the Garth Brooks Stadium Tour at 10 a.m., but you can win a pair right now by visiting the rewards page at arizonasports.com. Wow. Wow. It is amazing what's happening on the west side right now.
You know, it's always tough after a long road trip, gaining the energy, fly yesterday and have energy for today. But I thought guys did a great job of, pushing through the bad legs, staying in the system, and playing good team game tonight.
Wolf is the one that's got the onions to say it. I have not as of yet, but you have made the prediction. Not that anything happens to you if you're wrong, but it's still a strong statement on your part.
Thank you, Doug Lease.
It's a strong statement that you think the Arizona Coyotes are going to the playoffs. That was Darcy Kemper, and if you are right and they go to the playoffs, never forget when we're looking at April hockey.
Yeah.
This stretch of games right here. 3 games in 4 nights, 4 games in 6 nights, East Coast road trip, and your backup goalie is playing every game. And yet, he has one crappy clunker. Not great game against Pittsburgh, but that certainly wasn't all on him. And he has been fire on all the other games, and they just took the best team in hockey down 2-1 last night.
Yeah, no doubt. Listen, this team is playing really, really well. Now, listen, they're inconsistent. There's no doubt about it, but they're playing well. They killed Tampa Bay at the end of October. Remember that?
I think the
score was 7-1. 7-1, they killed Tampa Bay. They, by the way, Tampa Bay, an excellent team. They whipped the Stanley Cup champions in their barn, and then they beat the best team in the league last night. They beat 3 great teams in the league in the last 19 days. Listen, the Coyotes are dangerous. Yeah, they're volatile. There's no doubt about it. They're inconsistent, but they are dangerous, are they not? And what I loved about it as well, it doesn't matter what sport you're playing, Basinonians, it really doesn't. With every game, there are fulcrum points, tipping points in every game. And the Coyotes had 2 last night. I don't know if you were watching, but in the second period, the Coyotes were up 2-0 just over halfway through the second period, and the Preds were on the power play, and Darcy Kemper turned into Tony Esposito. Literally. Unbelievable. Oh, my gosh, they couldn't get it by him. This is, when you watch hockey, what do you think of? What do you think of when you watch a goaltender, a dominant goaltender, or a goaltender who's on fire during the game?
Miller in the Olympics.
You know what I think of? I think of a quarterback in the game of football.
Okay.
I think of a quarterback and how a quarterback can dominate a game, right? Win or lose. The reason why everybody's looking for that franchise quarterback. When you see a goalie that is on fire, it doesn't matter. You know what? Your back checking may stink. Your defense may stink. Your blue line. Doesn't matter. If you got a hot goaltender, you're not going to get it by him. The Coyotes, it's so unbelievable what they're doing right now. 9-8-1 on the season, okay? Granted, they're still, if the playoffs started today, they would not be in it.
But they're a point out.
But I'm telling you right now, this is a team that something is growing. It's coming together. And if you're a Coyotes fan right now, man, get ready.
They play, we've got a lot of play-by-play coming up on Saturday. And if you want the Coyotes, they'll be on News Talk 92.3. Face-off is at 6. They're taking on Boston. And I don't know if you read about Boston. They just sent Chara back to Boston.
No.
To have something checked out. So there's a chance their captain might not be on the ice tomorrow night. Coming up next, Cardinals getting ready for the Raiders on Sunday. So who will be the next man up to protect the franchise quarterback? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Good morning. Doug and Wolf here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Got three teams in action on Sunday that you can hear. 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station has Suns and Thunder. ASU's on the road at Oregon to try to, they can't clinch the Pac-12 South, but they can get pretty darn close. That'll be kickoff at 8:30 on ESPN 620 AM. And Boston tries to come end the high hopes of the Coyotes at 6 o'clock faceoff on News Talk 92.3 KTAR. And then we're at Sunday. Cardinals and Raiders. And what about this offensive line, Byron Leftwich?
The great thing that we is, we believe in the other guys that's in that room. Next man up is just not a slogan. We got to really have that thought, that mindset, that if another guy got to come in for another guy, he got to come in and play at the level that the guy was playing ahead of him. So that's our mindset. We're going to trust in our guys. We're going to help them when we can, put them in better situations.
We can say that. But is it really going to happen?
Yes. Is it going to happen, Paulie? Well,
Mikey Potty was on the practice field yesterday. That is a ding. DJ Humphreys was not on the practice field. He did tell us on the Big Red Rage that he's going to give it a shot today. And just reading between the lines, I think he's fairly confident he's going to be able to go on Sunday. If not, are you looking at seventh-round rookie Corey Cunningham making his NFL debut, Paulie, at left tackle? Now, the Raiders' defense only has 8 sacks. If you want to pick a team to make your debut against, you would go with a team that actually has fewer sacks than Chandler Jones does on the season.
Boy, the Raiders' defense really has struggled. Oh, my goodness, Paulie. You bring it up. Number 32 in yards per play. That's dead last, ladies and gentlemen, in yards per play. Now, what does that mean? That number, yards per play, it's just so interesting to me.
It means you have no pride in your own play. That's what it means.
Paulie, it means you
need to take ownership.
You are giving up chunk play after chunk play after chunk play.
It means your head coach traded away your 2 best pass rushers, actually traded away the first one, just cut Bruce Irvin, so now we don't care.
So now they're number 32 in passing yards per play allowed, to be more specific, ladies and gentlemen. Number 32, dead last in the league. They're number 32, to Paul's point, in sacks per attempt. they cannot get any pressure.
It means we're going to Vegas and we're going to leave a big stain on the field in Oakland. That's what it means.
Settle down, Paul.
The stat that I read that really proves Paul's point, Khalil Mack has played 2 games less than the Raiders have.
Yes.
And he has 1 sack less than the Raiders.
Yes. Right. There you go.
Right. It's 8-7 in sacks, and he still is down 2 games.
And there's John Gruden lamenting the fact they don't have a pass rush.
Pass rushers are hard to find.
You got rid of one of the top 5 pass rushers in the game.
As you would imagine, of course, you're number 32 in passing yards per game, and you're number 32 in sacks per attempt. Your third down isn't good either. They're second, penultimate to last, number 31 in third down defense, Basinonians, okay? And number 30 in points allowed. It just goes on and on and on. This is This is a get-well game for the Arizona Cardinals offense, and hopefully that's what's going to happen.
Paul, you might be able to shed some light on this. So here's what I do. I'm sitting at home, got the iPad, and then our wonderful reporters send us what we call sound in the business. So I'm going through the sound. I'm listening to it, kind of getting a feel for what the different coaches said. And we call them cuts, and there's a label. And one of the labels for Byron Leftwich says, learn from lack of protection in KC game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, here we go, because remember my little bit of shock and awe at Bruce Arians saying during the broadcast that this is a young play caller in Byron Leftwich, and I think he learned that he didn't have enough chipping and protection schemes in the game plan. I'm like, what? Bruce Arians hated chipping. How in the world is he talking about chipping? So I'm thinking, okay, the question is, Byron Leftwich, what did you learn? And I'm getting ready for him to say more chipping. I'm getting ready to say, we're going to do some more max protect. No. What did Byron Leftwich learn about protecting the quarterback in the KC game?
If we was to team up six, you don't have to be in the two-minute mode with 8 minutes left, and then you could play the game that you wanted, that we wanted to play.
That's what he learned.
Yes.
Have the lead you don't have to be in a two-minute offense. That's what he learned in protecting the quarterback.
The game turned for us, turned on us, and we had to put our guys in situations that's not ideal, especially playing that type of team with the guys that they have. And we learned from it, and we'll get better from it. But hopefully, you know, we won't be in too many of those situations where we have to be in the pass-now mindset.
First of all, the labels on those cuts, Doug, are called slugs in the business. You know that. You need to clean up your own game. And number two, I think what they learned is, especially if they have backups at left tackle, you need to run more David Johnson. I mean, go out and just let him have good 30-plus touches to David Johnson in this game. And he also mentioned, you know, when you talk about Josh Rosen and the ball security, and they had issues on that, there's no doubt about it. And
that's something we got to clean up. That's something that all rookies got to clean up. I hate to say it this way. Most of the times they learn it by making those mistakes. And when he make them, trust me, we're on them. We're on them just trying to give them an understanding of those things can't happen.
There's a breakout game coming, I think.
Yeah, you're
from
right,
this
Paul.
Offense and from Josh Rosen. And I got a sense it could be Sunday after talking to guys. They're just on the verge right now because there's no difference.
It's interesting.
There's no doubt. It's been night and day. And even last night, what Daniel Munyer and DJ Humphries were saying about, you know, sort of hinting how much thinking there was under Mike McCoy, and now they're playing faster and things have been streamlined. There's a lot of sort of general, you know, generic terms for they understand the offense so much better.
Yeah.
And I think the game planning is better, identifying a defense's weaknesses and how to exploit it. And the Raiders have weaknesses everywhere.
You know, it's interesting you say that, Bully, because I don't think it's just about the offense. Generally speaking, I get your point about a breakout, but it's David Johnson. David Johnson has not really had a house play. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Here we go, a little screen maybe, or maybe you're running the inside zone, the tackle zone, and then boom, 80 yards, touchdown.
And it could have been the fourth quarter interception, right?
Absolutely. On that screen right there, that thing was set out. That was set up to go to the house. That's the heartbreaking thing about it. He may have taken it to the house right there when the Cardinals were down by 6 points on that screen that Josh Rosen threw the ball and needed to put a little bit more air underneath that screen. That was not the case, and we all know that Justin Houston picked it off, right? But David Johnson, this is a game I could easily see him having that house play, 80 yards and a touchdown, whether he's running the ball or whether he's catching the ball, because the Raiders really struggle, Basinonians, when you watch them. They struggle to tackle. They're not a great tackling team. I don't think they're as bad as Kansas City. The Chiefs were really bad on tape, at least, watching them miss tackles left and right. But there's a reason why the Raiders are giving up the yardage that they are in yards per play. It's because they miss tackles. Not only mental errors, but they miss tackles.
There's one guy that's been on top of the Diamondback stories, if you haven't heard. Bob Nightingale on top of very strong Greinke rumors and rumors of the Diamondbacks investigating Atlanta heavily about their move to the northern suburbs and possibly the Diamondbacks thinking of doing the same thing going to Scottsdale. So that man, Bob Nightingale, going to join us at 7 o'clock. You're an hour away from the Cardinals general manager, Steve Keim, so we can give you the latest on Buda Baker. Up next, who thought this was going to happen? Could the Territorial Cup really be for the Pac-12 championship? It will be if both teams get through the games this weekend. What does ASU have to do to beat the Ducks? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. So U of A plays at 8:30 against Washington State. ESPN grabbed that game. So the ASU game. Did I say U of A plays ASU? I don't know what, if I said that weird. They play Wazoo at 8:30. ESPN grabbed that game. So U of A, Wazoo. And yet that game may or may not really have a lot to do with what happens with Arizona State as far as the Territorial Cup is concerned, because it's more than likely going to come down to the Territorial Cup on who wins the Pac-12 South. But ASU totally controls their own destiny, and if they win that game coming up, these two games, they're in the Pac-12 championship game against Washington State, and the winner of that game is going to the Rose Bowl. ASU is three wins away from a Rose Bowl. And I admit, as I sit here, I don't think they're going to win all three games.
No.
But just to say that's where we are, that if compared to where we thought we would be back in February, is really insane. And this is Mike Bellotti on Bickley and Murata on Tuesday.
I think we've all been impressed with Herm Edwards and the staff he put together and the overall organization and direction of the program. I mean, the numbers in terms of wins and losses haven't changed that much, but the reality is they're playing better. They're competing for the conference championship. And I think he surprised everybody.
I think he has surprised everybody, right? But all I can think of, Douglas, is this game coming up, right, against the Ducks. This game coming up, and they have worked so hard to put themselves into a position where they can actually make some noise. Mm-hmm. And nobody saw that coming. We all know that. And yet it's a two-game scenario for the Sun Devils and Herm Edwards. Two games. And you know what I think of? I cannot escape this. I know the Sun Devils have got to be able to run the ball, ladies and gentlemen. They've got to be able to run the ball up there, run it against that porous Oregon Ducks defense. They got to be able to line up and dominate the line of scrimmage. And man, does that travel. That travels so well. Running the football travels well on the road. It does, if you can do it. But let me just say, Manny Wilkins continues to hang in my deep recesses, the cracks and the crevices of the gray matter. All I can think of, Douglas, is Manny Wilkins. This is his game. Senior leadership. Here it is, Manny. This is what it's all about. It comes down to Manny Wilkins and the mistakes that he does not make. The decisions that he makes, good and bad. How bad are the bad, if you know what I mean, right? Those decisions right there. Manny Wilkins has got to lead this team. And you know what? His leadership has been awesome. The things I hear Manny Wilkins say, I just absolutely love it. I stand and applaud him. Now, it's about going out and doing this. Finishing well, Manny. Two games. Lead this team. He cannot go out there and make poor decisions and turn the ball over. Can't do it. He's done a good job of it. He's done a great job of protecting the ball and I think making good decisions. This is going to be won by Manny Wilkins. In a gross simplification of the truth, this game is going to come down to what kind of performance the Sun Devils get out of Manny Wilkins, in my opinion.
This is Manny yesterday on his message to the team.
I told them to really take a look and truly see that at the beginning of the season, when all of our goals were in front of us, you know, we have a chance to do something special. When that was taken away from us, so when the picture was taken away from us from going to a Pac-12 championship and all these things, our attitude, you know, guys are like, dang, well, now we're playing to go to a bowl. When that picture was now presented to us again and now we have an opportunity and it's in our hands, we control it, what are you going to do with that? When something was taken away from us so special and they're like, here it is, we're giving it back to you, now do what you may with it, what are you going to do with it? So it's on us.
Oh, my goodness.
That's pretty good.
What do you think? think about that, Douglas. Are you kidding me?
If you were really upset, like everybody acts upset. If you were really upset, if you really didn't like it, when we weren't mathematically eliminated, but we were logically eliminated, and now we've been given the gift back, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? How far are you willing to push yourself?
Boy, that is exactly what I'm talking about. And if he's walking around and he's saying that to his teammates, Basinonians, can you imagine if he goes out and makes poor decisions and he's careless with the ball, right? And then suddenly you're turning it over and the Ducks are going the other way. This is the reason why saying and doing is so important. The ultimate leadership you could possibly have in any locker room, any clubhouse, any dressing room is somebody that says and does. Listening to Manny right there, that is such a beautiful way to frame it up to his teammates. Hey, we were given a gift. We had all these goals going into the season, and then poof, we lost 4 or 5, and it was a nightmare. And then all of a sudden, we worked and put ourselves into a position where we've got this opportunity right here. Now, Manny, go out and do. Go out and do. Once again, it's not about Manny throwing for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns. It's about not making big plays for the Ducks, not throwing the ball to them. Ball security in the pocket. Ball security whenever he runs with the ball. Lead, Manny. That's what it comes down to. I'm really jacked up about this game and the opportunity for Herm Edwards and the Sun Devils. Two games. Two chances. What are you going to do with it?
Have you subscribed to the Doug and Wolf podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android. You'll never miss any of the show. It's the Doug and Wolf podcast is brought to you this week by PhoenixHousePainting.com.
NFL's best games with Doug and Wolf. Brought to you by Fry's Food Stores. Fresh food, famous low prices. Sign up and save now at friesfood.com.
All right, Basinonians, gather on the transistor and press the ear. Fortunately for me, there is one five-star game. The Kansas City Chiefs at the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah,
and
real.
That is your five-star game.
Five-star game with Doug and Wolf.
After a ton of crappy Monday Night Football games.
Think about it. This might be something like 45-43. I embellish a little bit, Basinonians, but think about this. The defense for both of these teams, it really has not been great at all, right? Don't talk to me about the Rams. Yeah, they've got Aaron Donald. Yeah, and Ndamukong Suh can still get it done, but it's not like they're a prolific defense by any stretch of the imagination. And the Kansas City Chiefs might be the worst tackling team in the league. These two offenses, it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Plus, there's the situation with Los Angeles. They've been the distractions for them, and I don't like that word in this sense because it just seems to diminish death, but what those families are going through, the players' families, and then this was a week that they were in Colorado. They tried to train in Colorado to get themselves at altitude to get ready for Mexico City. So they weren't even around while the fires in Southern California were raging. And they were I read articles of, should I bring my family? Should I not? Should the family stay in a hotel? Are the kids even going to school? And then now you find out, well, we don't need to be in Colorado. So now we're coming back home, but they still had some practices in Colorado. I mean, it's been a crazy week for the Rams, but they went through a lot of it going into the Seattle game. They canceled Friday practice to go into that Seattle game last weekend and still won that game. So there's a lot of subplots around this game that makes preparation very difficult for the Rams.
Yeah, you know what? I think of Todd Gurley and Kareem Hunt, Basinonians, the Rubik's Cube offense and the running backs of these two offenses with Todd Gurley, a guy that will dip and rip. We've been talking about David Johnson and the fact that that's something he did in the last game against the Kansas City Chiefs. We saw him dip and rip, choose the third rail of running the football, not going left, not making a move right, but running through a tackler, dipping and ripping. It's what Todd Gurley does better than any other running back in the National Football League. Maybe save for Kareem Hunt.
It's interesting to say that. Todd Gurley learning so much from David Johnson on how to be a more complete back, and now David Johnson needs to learn something from Todd Gurley about running people over. 30 minutes away, the Doug and Wolf NFL Insider with the latest on the Rams' preparation and maybe some of the coaching hot seat news and whether or not Steve Wilks is on it. Then, in 45 minutes, General Manager Steve Keim, Arizona Cardinals. Our exclusive conversation every Friday at 7:45 is coming up with him as well. Next, the one man who is saying, the one baseball reporter that has the inside scoop on whether or not the Diamondbacks would actually think about leaving downtown and doing it without Greinke and Goldschmidt is on next. We'll ask him, what's the future of the D-backs on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.